Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello, welcome everyone to the AEW All Out post show here on Fightful.com. I am Jeremy Lambert doing hosting duties. I don't like doing hosting duties, but I'm here and I'm here with my sworn enemy, Alex McCarthy from TalkSport. Alex, it is like 5 a.m. over there. How are you doing this morning for you?
Imagine how much I don't want to be here at this time. With you, it's a dreadful occasion, but one that I've subjected myself to nonetheless.
This was my plan all along. Is I was like, I know this is going to be a long show. It's going to be very early in the morning for Alex. If I'm ever going to do a show with him, it won't be on his time. I'm not going to have him on the distraction where we can record any time. I'm going to have him on a live show where it's 5 a.m. after just a complete... after a 4-hour pay-per-view, but I appreciate you staying up into it.
Don't worry. My oldest daughter is probably going to make a run in about an hour, and I'm going to be like, that guy is a bad man.
I don't want this show to go over an hour, okay? I want to keep this show under an hour. We're here to not waste people's time and not do long matches that are unnecessary. Everyone subscribe to the channel, youtube.com/Fightful. Leave a thumbs up, tap the bell notification to get the notifications. Leave us a super chat. If you give us a super chat, that is how your question, statement, comment will be read on air. Let's get into this show. The pre-show, Joey Janela defeated Serpentico, Private Party defeated Dark Order. Anything to say about these matches?
I hope to give you more than that throughout this hour, but yeah, I mean, to be fair, I thought Janela and Spensico was just kind of there. Not much to really pontificate upon that. I mean, I thought there was more in the Private Party Dark Order match, and I know we'll probably get into this a bit later on, but a bit curious the booking of the Dark Order tonight as a whole, right? Because they lose this match on the pre-show, and then of course they go on to lose the eight man as well. So having watched it, and to be fair, I thought the action in the Private Party and Dark Order match was serviceable. There were some good moments. I felt Janela and Spensico, like, I mean, that's the kind of match that would never have been on the main card with all respect to both of them. It was just kind of there. So Tony Khan was just saying on the call the other day that they really use the buy-in as something that's going to help, you know, draw people to the main show. Did you really see anything on there that if you watched, you know, and you were contemplating parting with $50 for you guys, right? Am I right in saying that?
Yeah. Yes. $50 right. On Fight TV or pay-per-view, however you order your pay-per-view.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that much for us here. Thank the Lord. But I think anyone who was contemplating parting with that money and watched that pre-show, I'm not, certainly the first match, less so the second match, I'm not convinced that would have done the trick for them.
The first match, Janela Saprinsigo, was just kind of there. I like the Private Party Dark Order match. I actually thought Dark Order should have won after they had a couple of spots. The spinning power bomb that John Silver did, and then the stunner into the German suplex jackknife pinfall that they did. I was like, why aren't those the finishes in this match? I thought those would have been much better. But Private Party gets the win with the gin and juice. I thought it was good. I don't know where they're going with Private Party. We'll get into Dark Order a little bit later. The pre-show, Britt Baker and Big Swole was supposed to be on it. It got moved, and then it opened the show. They added these two matches late. It was fine, but they were there. I don't know if it enticed anybody to buy the pay-per-view, though.
Right. Yeah. And it's interesting what you say about Private Party, too, because they even said on commentary, they're like, yeah, these guys have been hanging around fifth in the rankings, like, forever. Like, they're basically saying, like, yeah, no, they haven't really done anything. So it'd be interesting if they make a move. I like their finish, and I like their offense. They're a good high-energy team. But I actually agree with you. I felt there were several times where Dark Order could have took the win there. But there you go.
It wasn't – my issue with Private Party is that they're a good moves team. I just need a little bit more from them elsewhere, because I thought Dark Order looked a lot better in this match. We got a super chat from Avery Dunn, who says, it was too long. I got used to WWE short pay-per-views. Another super chat from Queen Hannah, Fightful contributor Queen Hannah. Wasn't bad, just was their worst so far. We were talking about this off air. We've been spoiled by these WWE pay-per-views going like 2.5-3 hours. Like, they're shorter than Raw sometimes. And then AEW comes with a show that started at 7 o'clock and ends at 12. Yeah. It was a long, long night.
No, it was. And I think that comment sums it up perfectly. Like, it wasn't an awful show. Like, it's not like, you know, it was an absolute train wreck from start to finish or anything like that, but it is their weakest thus far. And when, you know, I said this before the pay-per-view commenced, AEW doesn't miss on pay-per-view. They hadn't until tonight, in my opinion. And I think if they were honest with themselves, they would say that this was their weakest show. Didn't help, of course, that it's dragged over that amount of time as well. And then I'm sure as we get into this too, you have to factor in the Matt Hardy match. Obviously, a lot went wrong there. I know we're going to dissect that. Well, and then that had ramifications along the card, is what I'm saying. A lot of matches ended up going longer than they probably should have. The eight man being one of them, I have to imagine.
Well, let's get into the Matt Hardy thing, because it did kind of bring it down. And we got a super chat from Anakin JMT, who says, after the Hardy bump, I felt the wind got taken out of the sails of the show and was feeling underwhelmed. Thankfully, the last three matches brought it back. Anakin, I hope you had a good morning and fishing with your son. The Matt Hardy match, we'll talk about this now. We'll skip around a little bit. It was a last man standing match. If Matt Hardy lost, he would be leaving AEW. They do the golf cart spot, which I thought was great. Great start to the match. They battle up onto the scissors lift, and then they're going to do a spot through the table where they both go crashing through the table. They overshoot the table. Hardy hits his head on the floor. He looked brutal. Unconscious. Like, he was unconscious.
He was
unconscious. His face was purple. He was out of it. Aubrey Edwards, the referee, threw up the X. It looked like, okay, that's the end of the match. Like, we're done here. And then, you know, they start the 10 count. It's like, what is happening here? And Matt doesn't get up at 8, but Sammy Guevara kind of like helps him up to like, okay, we're good. Let's continue. Matt is stumbling around all over the place. Doc Samson comes in and he's like, no, this isn't continuing. They ring the bell. It buys like Matt some time. Sammy runs away. And then I guess Matt says, because they say later on in the commentary, Matt said he was fine. They continued the match. So they just continued the match. The bell rings again. They climb up the scaffold, which wasn't good. Sammy takes the bump. It was very obvious that, I mean, obviously Matt was supposed to win the match. And so they wanted to continue so Matt could win and they could get out of the stipulation of, all right, he doesn't have to leave AEW. You've got to protect the health of your performers in this instance. Like, Tony Khan mentioned concussion protocol on the media call earlier this week, talking about how Chris Nowinski has been in there to talk about to them about this stuff. Aubrey Edwards knew he was out. Everyone watching knew he was out. They've got to do a better job here because this was bad, and it completely killed the mood the rest of the show for a lot of people.
Look, normally I'd be on the call after these pay-per-views, and I'd be, you know, we get these scrum-like things where Tony Khan is often there, and I'm super intrigued to hear what he has to say about tonight, because I think he's going to have a very hard time justifying why that match was allowed to go on. And you could just tell by like the things they were feeding to the commentary throughout the evening. They were obviously like, I don't know, probably more than this, but they were like reading Twitter and realizing they're being crucified. Like their explanations made no sense. Like what was the first one? It was, oh, well, Matt Hardy said he was okay, so the match continued. And then they were like, well, actually, that doesn't sound very good, does it? And then they came back, what was it, two matches later. Sivone was like, oh, actually, no, that's not what happened, just to clarify. Okay, mate. Like, it was so silly. Like you said, the moment he hits the floor, I watched it, I was like, oh, that's a bad bump. And then the camera is right on his face. He's like, he's not there. He's clearly out cold. Oh, my daughter is here. And yes. Okay, hang on. Let Daddy riff on why Matt Hardy shouldn't have been in that. Listen.
Tremendous.
So, yeah, basically, like, it should have been stopped at that point. Like, he's out cold. The whole premise of that match would be that from the point that he's down, you start counting, right? Aubrey Edwards obviously doesn't start counting to begin with. She's like, he checks on him, not there. X is thrown up. And then it's like, it just doesn't make any sense that then Sammy Guevara is kind of awkwardly moving around and you're like, okay, well, this obviously isn't what it meant to be. We would all understand if the match was called off. No one's going to have gone, oh, but, you know, Hardy has to leave now. Or, you know, if they'd reneged on the stipulation, whatever. But Hardy, being old school, obviously gets up and says, oh, well, you know, I need to finish the match. You know, it's like his career's on the lines. So I can't have that. He's clearly not home. You can see that when he first gets up. Him staggering around trying to drag Sammy Guevara was incredibly uncomfortable. It should have been done there. That should have been it when they did call it. For them, you know, okay, yes, you're tough, Matt Hardy, and I appreciate it. But we didn't need that to come out and be the finish. And then for him to be concussed or whatever, and then they climb the scaffold. It wasn't good, man. And I just feel like that they're going to have a hard time explaining that. And really, bottom line, obviously we all hope that Matt Hardy is going to be fine and all of that stuff. But man, it's been snake bitten, that whole feud from the get go, isn't it?
Donny K says you'll spend more time analyzing the Hardy match than Doc did his symptoms. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take much to analyze his symptoms. The man was stumbling all over the place, like. Stop the match. And they did initially, and then they just let it continue. Someone's got to step in there and just be like, no, like, we can book around this stipulation here. All right, Hardy's gone. We can say it was one persona that's gone. He can come back as another persona. It's very simple. Sammy Guevara can even say, like, I don't want to win like that. You know, you can come back. You can do this easily. It's easy to book around a guy who I'll leave the company. Like, this happens all the time in wrestling. Yeah. Somebody says, I'm going to leave the company and they return. Okay.
They probably had like four of them.
Yeah. It's very easy to get around this stuff. What are what is your daughter's thoughts on Matt Hardy's concussion?
What do you think about Matt Hardy?
Hi.
Hey, say, hey, now play Mario Kart. Yeah.
Rebby Hardy was upset on Twitter saying, you know, he had a concussion, which he pretty obviously did. I think that's not a secret. And he went to the hospital. And I hope Matt's okay. I hope he's okay. And AEW's just got to be better.
It's one of them things as well, like, because of the very nature of wrestling, like, straight away you're like, is it a work? And then there's people, you know how wrestling Twitter is. They're like, oh, it is a work. You know, they're just trying to do something real or whatever. And you're like, okay, pretty sure it's not. Like, multiple people I spoke to immediately, two or three within the first sort of like 10-20 minutes were like, no, he's hurt bad. It was clearly legit. And I think as well, like, the way they rushed to the finish and all of those signs, like, you could tell that obviously something was up. And I think whatever the comment we had earlier is definitely true. It rippled down the card. You know, the atmosphere, kind of the crowd seemed hot to begin with. And I know Sean was reporting that, you know, things were humid there. And I guess that makes, you know, it makes a difference too. But I just felt that the energy was sucked out of the room. I, to be honest, and I thought Rosa and Shida had the best match on the card, right? But I missed the first 5 minutes of it, if I'm being honest, because I was kind of so wrapped up in what was going on with Matt Hardy. So yeah. it's a hard one, and I think AEW need to appreciate and address that they didn't handle it correctly and that they learned from this, you know, and that's all you can hope for, I think, now, look, you know, hindsight and all being 2020.
Patel Ron 6 says the Rebbe Hardy tweets were something. Yeah, Rebbe Hardy is going to show up to Daly's place on Wednesday and just start kicking somebody's ass. I'm pretty sure of that. She's going to have Maxell on one arm, and I don't remember the other kid's name, but the other kid's going to be on the other arm, and Rebbe's just going to start putting heels into some asses over there.
Haymakers everywhere.
We opened the show with the tooth and nail match between Big Swole and Britt Baker. It was a cinematic-esque match. It took place at Britt Baker's dentist office. Big Swole got the victory after she gassed out Britt Baker with the laughing gas there, and she won. We had some weird stuff where Britt Baker had a legit drill, like a home drill, trying to drill into. I don't think that's a proper dentist protocol there. No. I don't think that's a real thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, maybe that's what she uses. The diploma spot was outrageous, where she handed Big Swole hands Reba the diploma and then does a spinning punch, punching through the glass diploma and then just hitting Swole or Reba in the face, and she hurt her hand more punching through the glass than she did hitting Reba. I didn't understand it. Swole wins. It was dumb, but short and inoffensive and kind of fun, I thought.
Yeah. That, I mean, the Reba, like the way she held the diploma just reminded me of Big Show and the trash can and Del Rio all them years ago, where he's just standing there like, and is it going to happen? like, it was just, like, I thought people were like a little too harsh on it on Twitter for my liking. Like, did I love it? No. Like, was it the best cinematic match, quote unquote, that there's been? No. But I felt like you just said there, for what it was pretty fun. Like, you know, and I found myself chuckling, which is probably the purpose of the majority of it. It's not meant to be like a mat wrestling classic, is it? So I think understanding what it is and taking it as light a viewing will help. Should it have opened the pay-per-view? No, probably not. I don't think that's the strongest leg to lead on. You know, the Young Bucks that followed it was probably the match to lead with. But I thought some of those spots, like down the home straight, were just, you know, like when the needle goes into Britt Baker and Reba's like, you stab her. I was like, oh, okay. Like, I was laughing. So it was entertaining. I guess that's the best way I could describe it. But it wasn't my favorite cinematic experience.
I thought Reba was the star of this match, honestly.
Yes.
I thought she was great. And Britt, it's pretty clear that she's can't quite do an actual match yet, and that's why they had to pivot to this. I think they thought she would be ready for All Out, but she wasn't, so they had to go with this match. Maybe they run it back in an actual match. Hopefully Britt just gets healthy and can get back in the ring, but she's done great. As you know, while she's been injured, but was still doing this gimmick. I've been informed by FIFO contributor Hannah Moore that Matt Hardy and Rebbe Hardy actually have 3 kids. So I apologize that I'm not up on Matt Hardy's family. Okay. I'm sorry. She'll have the other kid strapped to the backpack on the back, and she'll still be putting heels and asses at Daly's place. Dizzy C says, I feel like I enjoyed half of this show. That sounds about right. I mean, I guess overall, you probably enjoyed 2 hours instead of 4 hours. So it would have been nice if they cut this down to 4 hours or to 2 hours. Would have been nice if it got cut down to 4 hours. It felt like an 8 hour show. Young Bucks against Jurassic Express. Young Bucks win. A lot of action. I thought everyone got to shine in this match. Young Bucks picked up the victory with the BTE trigger. I thought really Jungle Boy was the star of the show in this match. What'd you think?
I thought Luchasaurus had a great hot tag, by the way. But that's kind of like what he does. And he has those spots that he's good at and belies his size. So I do think the dichotomy between him and Jungle Boy is something that is still strong, even though you've seen it a few times now. It doesn't kind of wane on you. It's still strong. The Young Bucks have chemistry with everyone, it seems. You know, I think when you look at what they did with Kenny and Paige, as opposed to what we ended up seeing tonight with Paige and Omega and FTR, You can see the common denominators there, and I think Young Bucks just generally will always put on an insane match. You partner that with Jungle Boy and the obvious upside that he's got. He keeps showing it every time. You know, Double or Nothing with MJF as well. Fantastic showing. So I was very entertained by this match, and it was kind of like, I think after what we'd had on the pre-show and the cinematic thing, it was welcome, and it kind of set the tone nicely. And I thought at that point, oh, you know, we're on the ascension here, but it didn't really play out that way.
What does your daughter think of this match? Is she a fan of Jungle Boy?
She's not. She's a fan of Mario. What are you doing?
Huh? I thought, yeah, I'm with you that the Young Bucks, like, I think they're the best tag team in the world. The FTR can make that claim. A lot of teams can try to make that claim. I'm not even like a huge Young Bucks fan, but they are so good in the ring. Like they can just do anything. They like you said, they have chemistry with everyone. Their offense is so crisp. Their selling is good. It looks like we're getting set up for the Young Bucks and FTR match, and I expect the Young Bucks to kind of carry that match, honestly. But I thought this was a good match for what it was. Young Bucks showed off their serious side. Poor Marco got super kicked. He interfered. He had it coming, so I don't feel too bad for him.
No, exactly. It was like, and that's the thing. They were showing those shades of the Young Bucks and that kind of more aggressive tendencies. But like you said, he'd kind of had it coming. I think, you know, what you just said about FTR as well. Like, I think if you say that on Twitter, it's like blasphemy. Do you know what I mean? You can't be like, oh yeah. But at the end of the day, I feel like their AEW run thus far has kind of been a bit up and down. Like, they've had some good showings and they've had some kind of meh, and I will get on to tonight, but I thought it wasn't what I had anticipated. So, but what I will say for the Young Bucks, I always feel like I get what I'm after. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I feel like they deliver. That's what I will say about them.
Like, sometimes people just look at the gifts of the Young Bucks and be like, oh, there's no psychology or anything there. But watch the match. These guys are excellent. And I don't think, like, if you don't think that these guys are very good, then they're just not for you, because they're great. I was just going to say, if you say anything on Twitter, it's blasphemy. You get attacked over the dumbest things on Twitter.
I know. Trust me.
Casino Battle Royal. Lance Archer picks up the win here. Matt Sydal was the big surprise as the Joker. Poor guy comes in.
Unintended.
poor guy comes in. Like, people are like, oh, okay, it's Matt Sydal. You know, people were hoping for Pac coming in. Pac, whatever they want to call him.
Pac.
Yes. People were thinking Miro, Rusev, you know, people will throw out anything with this big surprise stuff. And just, all right, it's Matt Sydal. Like, cool. First thing he tries to do is shooting star press, slips, and just nearly kills himself on. That could have been so much worse. I'm glad he's okay. I'm glad he was able to continue things. It looked bad for him. Comes down to Lance Archer and Eddie Kingston. Eddie Kingston actually goes underneath the rope at this point, and then kind of climbs on the top turnbuckle and gets tossed off by Lance Archer. I don't really think that counts as throwing someone over the top rope. I don't know if Eddie Kingston is going to have a gripe about this on Wednesday, but I feel like he should. Lance Archer wins. He's going to get the title shot at some point. What'd you think of this match?
I thought it was a lot. Like, for a battle royal, it was booked like a lot. There was a hell of a lot going on. Like you just said, Matt Sydal, so unfortunate for him to have that introduction. It was honestly, like, you know how, like, Titus O'Neil, like, you kind of laughed, but with this one I was like, oh, well, that's
yeah.
And you know, Darby Allin getting put in a body bag of thumbtacks.
Yes. Yeah, a body bag that looked rough.
It did.
He got put in a body bag of thumbtacks and then power bombed on the outside over the top to the little staging area by Brian Cage. And it did not look good. They had a couple people checking on him. It took him a while to get up. It looked like it sucked. God bless Darby Allin. He takes these bumps and stuff. He could have a very bright – he's going to have a very bright future. He could have a longer future if he stops taking these kind of bumps. Because he takes these every single show. And at some point, you just got to slow it down, dude.
We hear these things, like, and I'm sure Tony Khan has said it, like, oh, you know, he had a bad concussion and, you know, we're going to try and, but they don't, nothing changes. Like, he is who he is. Like, how could this couldn't have got much worse? It was like, okay, we're going to put him in a body bag. That's probably not enough. Let's add some thumbtacks. Well, then what? Well, powerbomb him onto a stage. Like, unless the stage like was a pool of sharks or something, how would it could have got much worse? So I get it that they want to up the ante and do cool things. I thought it was a bit much. I was very happy that Archer and Kingston were the final two, because I thought Kingston and his new stable, it could be kind of a cool launching pad for them. And I just think Archer in general was great. And, you know, Jake obviously being a part of that package too. The finish, I'm assuming, will be used as a gripe moving forward. I'm assuming.
I would hope so.
Unless they think being thrown from the top constitutes the same as being over the top, which it doesn't. So I don't know how they're going to play that. But I thought the Battle Royale was entertaining. Like, you know, it was easy to watch, but there was like a lot going on, and I wonder if they maybe tried too hard with that. But you can't win, because then, you know, like, there'll be WWE battle royals where it's like, oh, you know, it's just lame and it's just a mess and there isn't like much concocted at all, and people will complain to high heavens. But then you give them everything like this, and then you get people like me going, well, that's a bit much. So I don't know. I think the ends justify the means, right? Lance Archer and Moxley, as we come to learn, is something I'm interested in.
I actually thought Eddie Kingston should have won, because I'd want to see an Eddie Kingston and John Moxley match, mainly for the promos. Like, give that 2 weeks, let him build it through promos.
Yeah.
It'd be great. People were saying that they maybe tipped their hand once Archer won. It's like, okay, well, you're not going to do Archer and MJF. So maybe they tipped it a little bit, but like, what are you going to do in that position? You know, you've got to have a winner here. The Battle Royal is not going on last. So Queen Hannah says, people said Brock too as a surprise entrant and got Matt Sydal in a painful slip. Yeah, anybody who said Brock.
Who said Brock?
You know, it's Twitter banter. People said Brock. People 100% said Brock. Hugh Janus, good one. It says it was a mixed bag of a show. The highs, main event, Sheeta Rosa, FTR were excellent, but the bad Hardy situation, Baker Swole, Sydal debut was poor. Could have done with cutting an hour, 6 out of 10. Yeah, definitely could have done with cutting an hour. And then we had a super chat from Jason Check, apologies. Thunder Rosa was dominant during her match. Sheeta didn't even try to fight back. It felt like the first 2.5 of the match, just punching bag, fight back, kick shove, get cut off, but do something. Let's get into that match, because we had the Broken Rules match. Again, we talked about that earlier in the show. Kind of took the wind out of things. And then we do Akira Sheeta against Thunder Rosa for the women's title. And yeah, Thunder Rosa dominated this match. Like, she had a counter for everything. The crowd was clearly deflated after everything, after the Matt Hardy situation. Sheeta ended up picking up the victory, though, but I thought Thunder Rosa looked better in this match than Sheeta did.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's probably by design. It was like a showcase for Thunder Rosa, and you saw all of her technical skills, her great selling. The facials that she had were really great. You know, her personality was radiating as she was on the offense. Without being cynical, I have to imagine that she was given a lot of the match, because at the end of the day, the NWA have agreed to let their champion lose clean. So you have to imagine that the compromise to that is that Thunder Rosa will be given a great spotlight and show what she can do. No real problem with that. It's just, yeah, I get what that person's saying in terms of the flow of the match, but I still think it was really well done. The finish kind of out of nowhere in some ways, I guess you could say. But I thought on the balance of the match that Rosa was the real star, and the match itself was something that, look, Ford and who was it who had the match at Double or Nothing? Penelope Ford. Was it Sheeta as well?
Yeah, it was Sheeta and Ford. Yeah.
Right. So like that was a great showcase for the AEW's women. And then it kind of feels like sometimes they get a backward step, because there'll be only a couple of minutes on Dynamite or whatnot. But this, again, was another milestone where it was like, man, that's a great women's match in AEW for me. So I feel like the whole reason they probably booked this, they got what they wanted out of it. So in that regard, it's a success.
Roxas Vanitas 1 says, is it just me, or does Thunder Rosa feel like a bigger deal than 95% of AEW's women's roster? Like, she might be the star they need. Yeah, I mean, they presented her as a star. And I mean, that helps is that like, hey, here's an NWA's women's champion. They gave her the showcase match on Dynamite against Serena Deeb. And then they gave her a lot in this match. So they present her as a star. The thing is like the, you mentioned the Sheeta and Penelope Ford match. That was a great match at the last pay-per-view. And then they did nothing with Penelope Ford after that. Like they could have had something with Penelope Ford there. She was on this show and like, I'm getting married and think, all right, cool. But they haven't done anything with her. And now you have to wonder, okay, like Thunder Rosa did really well in this match. Is she just going to disappear now? And so you've done two matches where the challenger looks really good. And then you've had no follow-up with it.
Mm-hmm. And I agree on Ford. Like I thought after that, that should be the springboard where you say, or she says, I'm much more than just a valet, or I'm much more than just an associated act with, you know, Kip Sabian and whatnot. That should have been the springboard. But instead, like you said, they haven't done anything with it. And that's probably a recurring problem in the AEW women's division, right? Because there's no, other than Britt Baker, perhaps, there's no kind of character that's really been threaded through all of it and has grown and progressed. We've just kind of got women there, the women wrestlers, you know, there's not much else to it. So I think that, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why people kind of get frustrated with AEW's women's division, but I don't think one of them is the delivery at the end of it on pay-per-view. Like all of them have been decent to great thus far. When I think back, it's just how they get there in between and who they build on the off season, because Penelope Ford was a cold build, really, you know, for Double or Nothing. It was just kind of there. And this one, again, they've had to bring in someone from outside and they've had to build someone who isn't really theirs. And that's investing, you know, the WWE would never invest that amount of stock in someone, rightly or wrongly, for a one-off match. And you can kind of see the logic there, because what's in it for AEW moving forward? You'd have to hope that they want to work something out.
That is my issue with the women's division, is these pay-per-view matches are very good.
Yes.
But the in-between stuff of how they get to these pay-per-view matches, it's very thrown together. I think Penelope Ford just won like a four-way match like 2 or 3 weeks before the pay-per-view. And it's like, okay.
That landed on her knee, wasn't it? It was that one.
Yeah. And it's just like, all right, so that's kind of it. And then they did a couple brawl spots in the weeks after, and that was that. And again, they didn't do anything with her afterwards. Like, follow up with that. You kind of had somebody with Penelope before and you just faded her to the background. I liked your idea of like, hey, I can do more than just manage Kip Sabian and just be kind of eye candy here who Jim Ross gawks at. We'll get into Jim Ross later.
No, will we?
Oh yes, we will get into Jim Ross. Dizzy C says they need to reevaluate these battle royals because they're consistently the worst parts of pay-per-view, either the rules or the time frame, something. Yeah, they try to do something different with the casino battle royal. Five people enter, so it's not just a bunch of people in the ring. I mean, if the surprise delivers, it works, but you know, this one, the surprise obviously didn't deliver. But honestly, these battle royals, you can put them on the pre-show. They can be on the pre-show.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they have them too much. I mean, I get it. In the last pay-per-view, it was the ladder match, so it was a bit, it's different, right? But yeah. They kind of have these spots where everybody has a chance to be involved, or multiple people do, and then vie for the world title. And I don't know if that's a bit cheap to have that on every pay-per-view. But I don't really have a problem with the different format and the way they do it. It, you know, it is what it is. But I do get the point of maybe over-relying on having one of those every single pay-per-view.
Peter Davies says, no coincidence that most of the best women's matches in AEW have involved Sheeta. Is great, should build around her and give her more time on Dynamite. Sheeta is great, and they should build around her. Again, they don't build anything with her, though. There's no actual feud build up to these pay-per-views, and then she just disappears for a little while. They brought in Vicky Guerrero to manage Nyla Rose, and I feel like there's been nothing about that since they paired each other up. They did the women's tag team tournament and Ivelisse and Diamante won, and then we haven't done anything on that. Like, I don't know what it is.
Listen, other than the fact that Sheeta is obviously an extremely talented wrestler, what do you know about her?
No, nothing. I really don't know anything.
AEW have told you nothing other than she's really good at wrestling. That's it. And, you know, that's that's hard for some people to connect with, right? Or to get invested in for their matches that when they do happen. The real selling point of this match wasn't that it was Shida, really. It was that it was a champion versus champion, per se. That's kind of what they build it on. And I think that's the problem. Like I said, they have to address that. And AEW, for most part, have just relied on managers to do that, right? They, you know, there's loads in AEW. We've got Tully Blanchard, we've got Jake the Snake, we've got all sorts going on. And I feel like it could be hard because I don't know what, you know, I assume Ashida lives in America at the moment. I don't know. I'm making things up now. But when she's here or not, like, if she's going to be the champion, you need to have someone who's featured and explain to people why they should care. And I don't think beyond her obvious talent that they've done that.
I know when Shida eats a Reese's, it's like our most viewed video on our Fightful page. So they should just have her like try different foods on a show. And that's what she's a food connoisseur.
It's
that's
a market.
What I want. Yeah.
It's a market.
I want Shida just trying American foods. That should be her gimmick. I don't know how much that's getting over, but I know people will click and watch those videos.
Yeah. That's it. That, you've got to command a little bit of the market, right? That's an expansion.
We had the 8-man tag team match. Scorpio Sky, Matt Cardona, QT Marshall, and Dustin Rhodes defeated the Dark Order of Cabana, Stu Grayson, Evil Uno, and Brody Lee when Dustin rolled up Cabana after Cabana missed the moonsault. Anakin JMT says, I feel like JR has started to turn into Lawler. So let's just address this. During the match, Anna Jay interferes, and then Brandy comes in and wipes her out. Anna Jay rolls to the outside. And Jim Ross says, did Anna Jay 99 have a wardrobe malfunction, or was that just wishful thinking on my part? And it's like, dude, what are you doing? And then he sort of apologized, but he ended his apology with everybody shut up and have fun with a little tongue emoji. And it's like, that's not an apology, dude.
No.
Just Jim, even during the Shida and the Shida and Thunder Rosa match, he made a comment about like, oh yeah, I'd like to take these women for barbecue or something. Like he does this every single show. And if you follow him on Twitter, he does this a lot on Twitter.
I said this earlier. He does do that. He drops like creepy emoji, like with his little hat, like weird stuff all the time. I don't know. Like 2020 is full of like those apologies that are like, I'm sorry that you're offended, like rather than I'm sorry. Like, do you know what I mean? Like rather than actually acknowledging that it's a bit creepy and pervy and you know, demeaning at the end of the day to say those things. Like you said, I mean, that's the sort of thing you would expect King to have said in the Attitude Era. And here we are 20 years later. And for some obscure reason, Jim, it felt weird when he said it. That was like the main feeling. I was like, JR. And it pains me sometimes to kind of admit that, I don't know how you feel about this, but to almost admit that JR is kind of not what he used to be, because he's like the voice of my childhood. You know what I mean? Like growing up in wrestling, he was like the soundtrack to me falling in love with wrestling. And now when I hear some of his stuff in AEW, like sometimes when he's really motivated, you get that old kind of fire and you think, oh, you know, JR, he's still got it. But the vast majority of the time, I listen to him and I think, "What are you doing?" And that there was more than one occasion tonight where I felt that way. Especially like he sent out that apology very quickly, and then how many times in the show was he like, "This is a great show"? Like, he was like, "This is a great pay per view." I was like, "We don't need you to like feed us how we're feeling about this pay per view." I don't know. I feel like those comments were way off base, and I'm not sure. I don't want to like castrate JR, but I'm not sure he's really needed in this day and age. I think Excalibur's like great, so I don't know.
Dizzy C said this had no reason to be on pay per view. Yeah, that 8-man tag. Once Britt and Swole got moved to the pay per view, I was like, yeah, put that 8-man tag on the pre show because I don't know what else you're gonna do with it. And also says, and JR is really getting into his Jerry Lawler bag. Patel Ron 6 says, my favorite is it's Ross time on Botchamania. Jim Ross, he doesn't add anything to these shows anymore.
Not anymore.
He He just doesn't. I think he's good during the Cody segments because he clearly cares about Cody and the Rhodes family and all that stuff. Otherwise, I don't think he knows what's going on half the time. Mm-hmm. And I definitely don't think he has any type of investment into these characters either. Is she okay?
Yeah, she's just doing her thing. Don't worry about that.
Okay.
Don't look like I'm not parroting here. She's just just got a call.
You're gonna get called out for Alex McCarthy, a terrible parent, doesn't pay attention to child's cough. Instead,
yeah,
does AEW review.
Swats it off as he slates eight man tag. No, to be fair, this match was like what 15 minutes. It felt longer than that to me. Like watching it, I was like, you know, this is just going through the motions. I get the end with. That, you know, obviously, subsequently, we know it's now going to be Dustin Rhodes, Brody Lee for the TNT title. I get it that the whole point of the victory was for that, I guess.
Yeah.
Did you need this on pay-per-view to get to that on TV? No, I don't think you did. And the story was already there with him taking out Cody. You didn't need this eight-man tag to do anything. And I don't think really, apart from the final minute of action, I don't really think it did much. It's just the Dark Order as well were one of their kind of.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you had an extra hour in your day, what is the first thing that you would do? Read a book, take a nap, play some video games, do something for a friend, volunteer. A lot of us spend our lives wishing that we had more time. But the question is, time for what? And if it was unlimited, how would you go about using it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important for you and to make it a priority. And therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. Therapy is so valuable. It's gotten me through some tough times, really helped me reflect on things that are important, specifically with BetterHelp. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be the convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. This is so beneficial when you've got that crammed schedule and you can't even imagine finding that extra hour. You can do it all from home. Fill out a brief questionnaire, get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Fightful today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. .com/Fightful. It's so flexible and it can help you find that social sweet spot with BetterHelp. That's BetterHelp.com/Fightful.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
After gaining all that momentum a couple of weeks ago, I just felt like this pay-per-view was a real miss for them. And Scorpio Sky as well, weird fit in all of this.
The Scorpio Sky addition was very weird to me as well. It's like, what does he kind of like have to, why is he friends with Cody? He just wrestled him and wanted to take his title. So why is he?
Yeah.
That was a weird addition to me. Dustin wins and then cuts. He got a really good promo and then he's going to get the TNT title shot on Wednesday. And we will see how that goes for him.
I was just pretty bored of that match. Like without being too like clinical, not much happened until the end. It was just like, okay.
Yeah. Anakin JMT says commentary was also annoying during the tag team title match, talking about things not in the match. Hardy update aside, shouldn't happen on the pay-per-view. Anakin JMT also says about the tag team title match, which we are going to get to. Glad Omega and Paige didn't split tonight. It would have been compared to Sasha and Bayley, and both deserve to be thought of on their own. It probably would have. Let's get into this tag team title match, because speaking of matches, at least to me, that just went way too long. This was about half an hour. The crowd seemed dead for most of it. It was like they were waiting for that turn, and it just never came. A lot of false finishes that, like, the crowd just was not biting on at all. They spent the majority, FTR did, spent the majority of this match working on Omega's leg that didn't go anywhere, because after the match, Omega just does a 3-hour walk and is fine. the finish comes. There was miscommunication. Omega hit Hangman Page with the V-trigger. Hangman gets hit with the spike pile driver. He kicks out. They do it again. Gets the pinfall. Omega's just kind of weirdly on the apron during the finish, and then, like, sort of tied up. This was kind of clunky, Alex. It was clunky and long, I thought.
I thought there something went wrong in the finish. I feel like, and I could be wrong, but I was going to make this point before you just did. I didn't really understand. I get it from on the surface that doing the finish twice is more impactful and somehow raises Hangman's stock, that it takes more to beat him, but I don't think that's what it was. It was like, when he kicked out, FTR looks a bit like, And like you just said, Omega was kind of like floundering, is maybe the adjective I'm looking for, like on the outside, but like on the apron. And then for the second one, I think it's Cash Wheeler who goes over and actually gets on top of him and is like, oh, well, you know, don't break it up or whatever. And then they get the free count and you think, what was the whole point of that extra minute? Like, they could have just done it on the first one. Like, nothing extra was added by doing it again, in my opinion. I felt the match, you nailed it. Like, the crowd didn't bite on anything, so nothing felt important. Like 10 minutes went by, and I was just like, you know, this is like, from a technical standpoint, like, decent wrestling, but it feels like nothing is happening. Like, we're just kind of wasting time, and you know it's going to be a long match almost, so that's the other thing. You're kind of like, okay, well, we've got a way to go yet until we actually get to the finish. And then, like you said, the turn that, you know, never really happened, all we got was Paige trying to get a hug out of Omega and you know, have him hold him up, and then Omega pies him off and wants to go get the Young Bucks with him in the car. It was considering, like, Paige is extradited from the Elite anyway, from the Bucks, I'm not quite sure what Omega was asking the Bucks to do at the end. Like, what decision they had to make. Because it's not as if by staying at the show, they were choosing Hangman Paige. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I don't know. But anyway, like, the whole story, I feel like, has been great with Paige and Omega. And I've been really invested the whole way. But this match tonight just didn't do it for me. I don't know. Like, like I said, the action was there and the story was there to a degree, but I just struggled to feel it.
BMegs 19 says it seemed like FTR just wanted it more. Yeah, they push for the opportunity and grab the brass ring. Omega and Paige need to, that's what they need to do. They need to get off Twitch, get off Twitter, and go after the brass ring. Yeah. This was definitely more of a story match than like an action match, but we saw with Bucks, Omega and Paige, like, you can do a story and still have a lot of action. The knee work they did on Omega, like cutting him off and stuff, like, it didn't lead to anything. And then we had the spot where Omega keeps doing dragon suplexes when Hangman wants the tag, and it's like, oh, Kenny's being like selfish here. Like, what's going to happen out of this? And like, nothing really came of that either. It felt like at some point in this Omega page, because you said it just a second ago, Hangman tries to embrace Omega, like, hey, you know, we're still friends. Help me up here. You know, hold me up. I'm not doing well. And Omega's like, eh. Fuck off. And then just leaves. He's like, time to clean up this mess is what he says. You know, the cleaner references here. Time to clean things up. And the Bucks just stay. It's like, what choice are they making? They have kicked Hangman out of the Elite, right? Like, that was a thing that happened. Like, they've abandoned Hangman. So, like, what's the decision here? I feel like they've lost the plot at some point with the Hangman stuff. Him costing the Bucks the match. the other week, and then FTR being like, you know, you did this on your own. It's because you're a drunk. Like, nobody got in your head. You're in your own head. It's a little all over the place, and we'll see where it goes. But it seems like they're trying to do a lot of different things. Like, they're trying to tease Hangman being heel, but also face. They're trying to tease Omega being heel, but also face. Same with the Bucks. Like, it's kind of just too many teases. Just tease one, pull the trigger on that, and go with it. Okay, it might be predictable, but predictability is not bad if it's good.
Yeah, if it's done well, then it doesn't matter. I mean, I always thought, for me, the destination was Hangman Page as a big babyface, well, however you get there. And I feel like maybe they've just got in their heads, like, in their own heads creatively, because you're trying to not give people what they expect. And I think they're trying to give all these twists and turns, and, you know, it's been kind of cool, but tonight it just didn't work for me. And like I said, although the action was good in the match, it, for me, it just, whether it was the how long it took to get there and all of the stuff, I didn't come away feeling like, wow. And I also think part of that is, and I'll link this to what it was like when I was at Mania 34, I thought AJ Styles and Nakamura was going to be like the shit. I was like, this is going to be amazing. I'd seen what they'd done at Wrestle Kingdom. I was like, this is going to be the match. And it wasn't. It was just like a match. Like, but you've already preconditioned yourself to say this is going to be amazing because of the talent involved. And I guess a little bit of that as well has, you know, Retribution, definitely not in my mind, Revolution from back in February, where like Paige and Omega killed it. You all right? That's like a token all right now. So no one goes, he's a bad dad. So like, I think that's on my mind too, where I thought they were going to like crush it again. And with FTR, there was every reason to believe they would. But to me, it just didn't quite get to the levels that you would have hoped for.
Jim Ross said Retribution a lot on this show, so I can understand you saying Retribution.
Right. Over
Revolution. Oh, yeah. He said that so much. We will see where things go with Hangman and Page Hangman and Omega and the Young Bucks. Hopefully it goes somewhere. I'm sure it's going to go somewhere. FTR's title win kind of felt overshadowed here by all of this too. It's like, oh yeah, FTR is the new AEW tag team champion. Now their claim is that they're the best tag team in the world. So we will see. Anakin JMT says, Alex, my son will randomly cough too. As long as she's not choking, she's fine.
Exactly. She's playing Mario Kart. She's fine.
I'm not a parent, so I don't know these things.
What are you doing then? You're on YouTube, right? Even worse. Never mind.
Is she camera shy? She's like, I'm not getting these views for this other website. Yeah, I'm not
helping you out.
Yeah, come on now. We had Penelope Ford, Kip Sabian backstage. As I said, they're getting married on Dynamite at some point. So big wedding angle to pop the ratings. The fans love the wedding angle. And they took the shot at WWE with the Twitch stuff. People were mad about this. It's harmless fun. I thought it was
funny. I thought it was funny, personally. And I think sometimes now people just want an excuse to be like, oh, they can't stop talking about WWE whatever. I think, come on. He also said that he's going to have a handsome best man, who I'm curious as to whom that may be. I assume it's a return rather than a debut, but...
Yeah, but maybe. I mean, Rusev knows something about doing weddings on television, so...
This is what I was thinking.
It could be. We move on to the co-main event, Orange Cassidy against Chris Jericho, Mimosa Mayhem match. Orange Cassidy wins. He hits the two orange punches onto Jericho, who falls into the vat of Mimosa. It was fine. I don't know why there were pinfalls and submissions in this match. That seemed unnecessary to me.
Didn't they announce before the match the way to win was to get them in the vat?
No, they said it was pinfall, submission, or putting him into the vat of Mimosa. And it's like, you're not going to have this match end in a pinfall or a submission. Like, you're not going to bring these pulls of Mimosa out there.
And then, it's not used.
Yeah, and then not use it. So I don't know. I don't know why they did that, but they did. Orange Cassidy wins. He gets two victories over Chris Jericho. That's a big deal.
Yeah, the fabled Mimosa Mayhem match. I mean, like, the actual action was pretty hard. Like, the table spot that Orange Cassidy was subjected to was hard. Like, there's glass still on it and stuff, and he goes crashing through it. I think the barricade spot for Jericho as well was, like, much harder than it needed to be, because obviously they weren't linked. So he ends up just kind of, like, sprinting face first onto the concrete. It ends up being a lot harder than it was. So, like, although it's, like, I think on the surface you think, oh, Mimosa Mayhem, it just sounds like a terrible gimmick match, you know, that we've seen 100 times in WWE where they just combine gimmicks and make something. But this was actually like a really intense affair. And if you know, credit to Jericho and Cassidy for doing that. It was a lot, there was a lot more to it than I had imagined, a lot more substance. And I didn't actually expect Jericho to take the loss. I probably should have, thinking all the people who's tried to put over Fandango and people like that in the past. But, and I like Fandango, by the way. But it's one of them where, you know, they're trying to elevate Orange Cassidy. But I'm looking at it now and I'm thinking, well, where does Orange Cassidy go from here? Like, because technically from a Jericho win, it's like, well, he's essentially on the cusp of, like, the main event title picture. Like, essentially. So who do you have him work with next? And believably, I don't know. It tells you everything you need to know, though, about what AEW and Jericho thinks of Orange Cassidy. So in that vein, I feel like Jericho did a really good job of showcasing the best parts of Orange Cassidy for people to take him serious.
DZC says, Mimosa wasn't the best, but was my favorite match. That seems like a backhanded compliment. It wasn't the best, but it was your favorite match.
Sounds like my dad right there. Yeah, you're not the best, but yeah.
I'm with you on where does Orange Cassidy go from here, because you get two victories over Chris Jericho, the only other AEW champion outside of Moxley. Like, you should be pretty high on the rankings. I'm not even sure if he's like on the official rankings, which would be kind of a weird thing. But you can't do him against Brody Lee just yet, because he's got to do the thing with Dustin. And maybe you can do best friends and Dark Order at some point down the line. Like, you're not going to do him against Moxley. That's a weird thing.
But like you said, you should move him upwards, really. Yeah. Like, you know, you need to put him in a decent angle or feud to really move him along. Otherwise, what was the point? So
yeah, but I don't know if they have a decent angle. Like, Jericho is top of the top, like outside of a title picture or the Elite, which they're not going to do any of that stuff. It's hard to go up from Jericho. So really the only way you can kind of go is down. So,
well, you'd have to buy some time and it'd be like, I don't know, not now, but maybe like a Matt Hardy would have been a good example because he's got a lot of name value that you could maybe pair him with. I'm struggling to think off the top of my head right now, heels particularly, who he could just walk into a feud with and, you know, keep building.
The other issue is, like, is Orange Cassidy just going to go back to being Orange Cassidy now? Like, he just doesn't take anything serious. And maybe that's how you drop him back down the card, is it's like, all right, Orange Cassidy doesn't care about this feud with, I don't know, Joey Janela or somebody. He doesn't care about this feud with Luther. Like, he's just going to be Orange Cassidy. I mean, maybe that's how you do it. I don't know. We'll see where they go from that. But Orange Cassidy, he's getting a big rub from Jericho here with two big wins and a big win on pay-per-view. Main event, John Moxley. Reminder, guys, leave a super chat, get your question, comment, statement read on air as we wrap things up with the main event. John Moxley against MJF. The paradigm shift was banned. The match started, and MJF does a lot of technical wrestling, and I felt like that was not the right call for how long this show was and what the people wanted. It really picked up, though, once MJF got busted open and he started working with a sense of urgency. You know, he was biting Moxley. He was working that grinding style that Moxley said he was going to drag him into. Finish came with Wardlow tossing in the Dynamite Diamond Ring, MJF fumbling it. The ref's back was turned. Moxley, who they teased the paradigm shift multiple times, and the referee was like, what are you doing? Don't do this. And
hated that.
Yes.
I hated it.
I'm with you. Like, he knows he can't use this move. Why is he even attempting to use this move?
Please, John. What are you doing?
Yeah, why? And why does the ref care? Like, is the ref like, is he out for Moxley or out for MJF? I mean, maybe he should be, but why does the ref care? He shouldn't show any bias, right? If Moxley's going to do the move, let him do the move. That's not on the ref to do anything about that. Moxley does hit the paradigm shift, though, when, and the referee's back is turned. MJF is going to pick up the ring. Moxley's paradigm shift gets the pinfall. Moxley is still the champion. What did you think of this, Alex?
I loved it. I loved the main event. For me, the best three matches on the card were Rosa, Shida, the Bucks, and Jungle Express, and this, the main event. That was my favorite three. Actually, Jericho and Cassidy's in there somewhere as well. They're not my top four, give or take positions. But for this, that was the only thing I really didn't like. I didn't understand why the ref kind of got in the way and was like, don't do it, John. Like, in any other sport, that's just not going to happen, is it? Like, you're not going to, I don't know, like LeBron James is not going to try and choke someone and the ref's going to go, why? He's going to go, no, you're out, mate. I mean, he probably will say, "Don't choke him." But
I think it's akin to like dunks are banned in this game, and LeBron has a fast break, and the ref just like stands there like, "Don't fast break. No. You can lay up fine. Lay up, no dunks, LeBron. No dunks.
Yeah. Remember, LeBron. Like, I don't think that's what's going to happen. But yeah, that's the thing. Like, for me though, the story of the match, and I said this last week on Twitter. When you looked at the promos, it was obvious that Moxley was planning on dragging MJF to like his level per se in terms of like the hardcore elements and the gritty tough stuff that MJF hasn't really had to do in his career thus far, and it's the same kind of thing that Mick Foley was used for that tremendously in WWE for years with Rock, Triple H, and Edge, Orton. There's like poor Foley, like he was used as a battering ram in all of those instances, but. It gave all of those superstars that extra layer, that extra side of aggression that helped people take them seriously as top contenders. And that's probably what MJF felt like they needed to put on him here. And I think it worked. By the end of the match, you know, he looked like someone who could go to the deep end and was prepared to lay it all on the line. He looked tough. He wasn't like, and MJF, by all accounts, is a cowardly heel. But he showed tonight as well that he can definitely go and that he's definitely prepared to do what it takes. So I think it was mission accomplished in that regard. Like, MJF didn't have to win to get that rub. I felt like he got a rub for his character and his in-ring persona tonight. I thought the action was great. You know, he was working over Moxley and his elbow / shoulder. Like, that was actually a pretty nasty bump when MJF took him down onto the apron. And then you've got this whole dynamic of, well, in the ring, MJF is on top. Oh, but if you go on the outside, that's Moxley's domain and you don't want to go there. So, and the match kind of ebbed and flowed based on that. So I thought it was cool. And then leading into the final finish, it all worked for me. It all did. It was a great main event that you'd have for a world title. If it'd been on any other show, right, that had been preceded by great matches, you'd have been like, capped off great. So, yeah.
We have a run-in from the B squad here. Let me bring this person on.
You're talking about being in somebody's domain. Alex McCarthy, you are in my domain right now.
Don't talk to me like that in front of my daughter, Sean. All right?
I've been busy, you know, talking to John Moxley and Hikaru Shida and Tony Khan and all these people about humidity. Humidity is what we're talking about.
What the fans want.
It
Alex's
is.
Daughter sounds like she is in the humidity, just coughing up a storm over there. We've determined that Alex is a terrible parent on this show by not checking on his daughter.
Yeah. she's wasting away behind me, literally. I am. She's Matt Hardy, and I am the doctor at AEW. That's essentially what we are right now.
So,
Sean, what did they say about what did Tony say about Matt Hardy?
Oh, okay. So what Tony said, by the way, we have the full scrums up on this channel. We've got notes up on Fightful.com. Make sure you guys check them out. He led off with that, and he said that he made a call to stop the match. The doctor immediately checked on him, cleared him, gave him the go-ahead, and there was some hesitance because he knew the spot that was coming up. But the doctor cleared Matt Hardy. However, they did take him to the hospital for precautionary measure. I can tell you, I reached out to Matt personally. I have not heard back from him at all since then. So I don't know how he's doing, anything like that. I did reach out. Rarely do I do that on nights like this because I like to leave people alone. But haven't heard back. And they say he's okay or that he's fine, but precautionary measure, they took him in. Nobody asked about Matt Sydal. I was a little bit disappointed about that. Oh. No update on that. They did speak about the humidity. John Moxley said that he was completely soaked halfway through his entrance. And even this morning, Renee, who was there tonight, was like, man, it's really humid today. Also, he one of the highlights was him mentioning Renee. It wouldn't surprise him to see her in AEW on programming, but she has got like an extensive non-compete with WWE. So she couldn't even be shown on camera at all tonight because of that, obviously.
Wow.
Yeah, we already knew all this. I've listened to 300 Renee Young interviews this week. I've listened to a couple Moxley interviews.
None with me. None with me. But if anybody wants to listen to my interviews, I interviewed Ricky Starks, best interview he's ever done. I've interviewed Matt Cardona. I interviewed Thunder Rosa, who was a star tonight. Interviewed Eric Young this week. Lots of interviews. And we're going to have more stories from those all throughout the week. But my AEW NXT review is behind the paywall because my content is premium, you know. And hey, so Alex McCarthy reviews stuff from 20 years ago behind the paywall.
That's Jeremy, right.
Jeremy.
I got notes that are 150 words long behind the paywall.
He does. He submitted this sad just shell of notes. I was like, I did. I go, where are the rest? Oh, that's all of them. All of them. Which he does it out of the goodness of his heart. I'm not going to complain.
Usually my notes are much more uplifting from SmackDown.
Yes.
I was drained yesterday after my sports teams just failed and let me down once again. I told you, I went for an hour-long walk, and I just made it back in time for SmackDown. I was like, I don't have the energy to review this show.
I went for a two-hour-long walk today. But anyway, just to one-up you, I did. through the woods. But the best episode of SmackDown in months, and you muster up 150 words. Oh, amazing.
Look, tell my sports teams to be better, okay? Tell them to be better, and I will produce better content. I don't have to worry about it now. They're all eliminated.
I'll do that. Just be a Raptors fan.
Yeah, I could. At least they're 2-2. Sean Anakin JMT says, Sean, your cookies are made. What about mine? I don't care about Sean. I'm about to kick him off of the stream.
Man, I got mixed feelings. Like, I'm trying to lean out and all this stuff, and people just keep giving me sweets. Like, I had two people make me birthday brownies this week locally. And I was like, what's the angle here? What are y'all trying to fatten me up for? What's the old fairy tale? Not the fairy tale, the old, man. It's not the three little pigs. Who cares? Somebody's trying to fatten me up.
BMEGS19, this is not a super chat, but I'm going to read it anyway. The Distraction did the best Ricky Starks interview, sir. Thank you.
Well, you know what? Put user in timeout. Sorry, you have been put in timeout for that.
The Distraction did do the best interview with Ricky Starks. You buried me to Starks and used my own joke against me.
Hansel and Gretel, Anakin JMT says. Okay. Hansel and Gretel.
There you go.
He's trying to Hansel and Gretel me.
Can I just kick you off of the stream? I can just remove you, right?
You can, but I'm going to leave because I have worked.
I just removed him. I want to make sure I could remove him before he just actually left, so I get the last laugh there.
You win. That's a victory.
Yes, exactly.
As Kip Sabian would say, a W.
He's going to message me and threaten to fire Joe now. He won't fire me. He'll fire Joseph, though. What are we talking about? Miz and Miz. MJF. They've been doing comparisons in the chat, Miz and MJF, all night. And so I just completely slipped up. And I don't think Miz and MJF are the same. Miz is much older and been around much longer. And MJF has a very bright future. Ahead of him. MJF and Moxley. I like this match in front of a better crowd, in front of a better show, or capping off a better show. I think it would have been a lot well received, but the crowd was dead by this point, whether it's humidity, the show being long, whatever it was. They just couldn't really get into it until the very end. But MJF, like you said, it showed off another side of him. Come with the blood. Once the blood hit and he got more aggressive, I thought that was a great look. Moxley picks up the victory, but MJF has a complaint because he did use the paradigm shift, and you know they can run that back in November. They could do MJF and Wardlow split maybe, because Wardlow's kind of screwed up in a couple instances here. He lost that tag team match, and now you know he flubbed the diamond ring, and he also messed up some things just not being around during the Moxley stuff, during the feud. So they could do that, maybe hold off on Moxley and MJF too, but they got some direction here with the title match in the coming months.
Yeah, and I think Wardlow's got a ton of upside as well. So yeah, like you said, if you wanted to pivot away from Moxley and MJF, that's the obvious story, right? MJF and Wardlow, like, and making that happen in November. Presumably, I would assume Archer maybe gets his shot before November against Moxley. I'm not entirely sure, but that's a long time to drag it out. So, I mean, I feel like MJF, he is one of them. Like, I liked him with Cody. I like him with Wardlow. I think he's just kind of better around people. And at this stage in his career, his personality is so interesting to watch, and his character, that I'm in no rush for him to kind of break away from that kind of character, I guess. I like the way he is right now, but at the same time, I do have an intrigue in watching him and Wardlow. I think the only thing holding me back from that, though, is it like, well, how do you lift them both up in that instance? Because MJF is probably the one that they have like the highest hopes for, maybe in the company. And Wardlow has a lot of upside, but he will kind of get left behind maybe on with MJF in that instance. So I don't know. There's a lot of interesting things you can do, but am I right in thinking that this is MJF's first actual solo loss in AEW?
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't want to, I'm assuming that they're going to try and keep him at a very high level. So we'll have to see where they go from there. But for Moxley, I feel like he's having a good reign, as you can have maybe without fans. You know, it's been a bit stop-starty, of course, you know, with the Corona break and stuff like that. But well,
I mean, he's had two great pay-per-view matches. I thought the Brody Lee match was fantastic, and this match was fantastic as well. The Hager match was a complete miss, but that wasn't technically pay-per-view. It was just a big show. But yeah,
I thought Hager and Cody was a miss as well. So well, there's a common denominator there.
Hager in general is just a miss. Let's be honest. Just doesn't add much to any of this stuff. Moxley's reign has been very good. It's just, yeah, it's unfortunately been in front of no fans. And he's a guy who his presence alone, like with the fans and everything, it just feels like a much bigger deal than a lot of people on this show. You take the fans away, he's still a big deal, but it hurts his aura a little bit. But yeah, I'm with you. Moxley's reign has been good. The Wardlow stuff, you can go a lot of directions in this. I just thought about, you know, Wardlow could actually challenge Moxley in November. You can heat him up real fast because he has all the tools to be a big player and challenge for the world title. Wardlow could win the world title. And then MJF is like, all right, well, he's the champion. You know, do I use him as a pawn? You could go a lot of places with the MJF and Wardlow stuff. So we'll see where they end up going with it.
Do you think that the title will ever play a factor in maybe the Page and Omega story?
Not yet. It should at some point, but it seems like they're just
to anoint Paige at some stage. I think.
Yes, I agree with you. Like they have a lot of interesting stories that can use the title, but also don't need the title. And it seems clear. At least, I mean, they're a year into the company, and they've only had two world champions. So there doesn't seem like they're just going to be out here switching that title every pay-per-view, every month or anything like that. Like they're invested in some long reigns here. And when you're invested into long reigns, just like not everything can have the title. Like, and you've got to pull the trigger on these feuds at some point. You can't just delay Page and Omega another year because, all right, it needs the world title, but we can't get the world title off of Moxley. We can't get it off of MJF. So they're good with their storylines. I think sometimes they get muddled a little bit, as we talked about with the Elite stuff, but they have the threads there where they do a lot of different things, which I appreciate.
Yeah. I think the thing with Page and Omega as well is that, like, you could have it like Michaels and Jericho in 2009 or whatever that was. Like, that feud's already rolling, and then the title kind of becomes a part of it later down the road. But I like I said, I think they've got a lot of different possibilities at both sides of the card, heel and babyface, and, you know, some people who are established, and there's a lot of different, are these people going to turn? Or we still don't know if that new Four Horsemen thing is really going to come to pass. Like, there's a lot of different irons in the fire for AEW, which is kind of what keeps it exciting. You know, NXT has less at the moment, in my opinion, in terms of,
I don't know what NXT is.
In terms of in story developments and possibilities. But I think AEW, that is where they succeed. It's just unfortunate that tonight just didn't feel like their night. Like a lot of people who you've said in the super chat and stuff, like the 5 and sort of 6 out of 10, that's probably where I would keep it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what is your rating? So you're at about the 5.5, 6?
Yeah, I would say so. And I liked those four matches a lot. But and it's not that the tag match wasn't good. It just wasn't as good as it should have been. It just ended up being a very average show, in my opinion. And I wonder, I'm trying to do that as fairly as possible without factoring in, like, the crowd. Because I feel like that does play a role sometimes in how you judge things.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to look at it as objectively as possible. But I do feel, speaking as someone that has championed AEW on pay-per-view, I think tonight is the worst one they've had thus far. That's not to say it was awful, but it didn't meet the standards that they have set.
I definitely thought it was their worst pay-per-view. And this is an issue with Tony Khan also. I mean, yeah, they've set a high standard. So this isn't like a Tony Khan thing of like, oh, you promised a lot of stuff. But Tony Khan did promise a lot of stuff on that media call. He was hyping it up. It's going to be the best in-ring show we've ever had. We got all these surprises. Like, everybody's going to be blown away and stuff. And he does this for every single pay-per-view. And so far, everything is hit. This one was a miss. And, you know, you can't predict a lot of that. You can't predict that the humidity is going to kill the crowd and kill some of the performers. You can't predict the Matt Hardy stuff. That still should have been handled better, but you can't predict that that's going to happen and things like that. I get that stuff, but you know how long this show is going to go. And it would have been longer, by the way, if the Matt Hardy stuff doesn't happen, because that match was not going 5 minutes. Like, that was going to be a much longer match. Mm. They should have cut some stuff when it was pretty obvious that, hey, this is a long pay-per-view. People seem kind of tired out there. You know, let's cut off some time on this tag team match. Let's cut off some time on this 6-man or this 8-man tag. You can cut some stuff, but they didn't. They did their show. I thought it was their worst one. I'm still at about a 6 with it, because the main event delivered. And there was some other good stuff in the show. The tag team match, Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus against the Young Bucks, I thought was great. So, but still, 6 out of 10, I thought it was their worst pay-per-view to date. But, you know, when all your pay-per-views are very good, something's got to be the worst, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like we said, it's not a damning score or judgment, to be honest. Like I said, there was still good stuff to be had there. But like you said, as they have set the bar so high, unfortunately, I guess this pay-per-view was always going to come at some stage for them.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It'd be interesting to see, you know, what they do moving forward and the noises that come out of this. They've got the stories in place to make it work. So let's hope that it was more of a setting thing and just how the night went, as opposed to any longer issues.
SummerSlam kicked the crap out of AEW All Out.
Yeah.
Write that headline, everybody.
Yeah, done.
Alex, let the people know where they can find you. You're everywhere.
Yeah, even here it's 6 a.m. I'm right here. So Alex M _ Talksport on Twitter is where I'm at my busiest, I would say. I've got the same handle on Instagram, but unless you really want to see me, you know, my kids.
No one checks in Instagram.
No one cares.
People might want to see your daughter after tonight. Your daughter was the star of this show.
Yeah, the secret star. Oh, you want to wave goodbye to the people?
Bye.
Oh, you're just saying bye. Like, hey.
Hi.
Yeah, that's a big smile. You say bye-bye?
Nope.
No, you'd rather be on YouTube. All right. So, you've got me there and Alex McCarthy on YouTube. I have a show on the radio, which you can catch every Monday, but actually my show's on Tuesday this week because of live sport, which I hate. You can get that on the TalkSport app for anyone in America. And of course, TalkSport.com/wrestling is where you'll catch all my interviews and stuff. And I'm the only guy doing it for TalkSport. I don't have to compete with my own peers, Jeremy, for the best interviewer in the house.
I don't have to compete either. Sean just likes to believe that he had the best Ricky Starks interview. But look, he had to go to AEW to get Ricky Starks. Okay. He's like, oh, do you have any interviews? And they're like, yeah, we'll give you Ricky Starks. Ricky Starks comes to me when he wants to be interviewed.
He's
all
being
right?
your DoorDash.
Yes, exactly. He's right. the one messaging me and be like, hey, can I come on your show? So we all know who Starks likes more. Alex does some fantastic interviews, by the way. Just who have you interviewed this week?
Jericho and Naomi. And then I was kind of at the ground level of all the NXT UK reboot stuff. So I went to the studios. So Walter and then a lot of the other NXT UK stars. That was just this week. Been very busy lately, which is good.
Dominic Guerrero, future world champion, the other week.
Dominic Guerrero, is it?
Yes, Dominic Guerrero. I said, I know what I said.
And I knew you did. It's such certainty. Angel Garza as well was another recent one, which was really good. I've been lucky enough to stay busy. Eric Young as well, after he won the Impact title. Trying to diversify out here. All right.
There you go. Everyone follow Alex McCarthy. Follow his work. I'll bury him on Twitter, but he's actually a very nice guy. I was ready to bury you for not doing this show and call you a coward, but you actually did it, so I appreciate that.
When you tentatively messaged me earlier, like, are we still doing this? I was like, I have said yes.
Well,
when I tell you yes.
I didn't know if you were going to be like, oh, you know what? AEW's doing media scrums, and I'd rather do that than your stupid show. So that's what I was afraid of.
Do you know what? They did message me earlier, the actual AEW PR woman, and she was like, oh, because I hadn't registered for the webinar.
Right.
And they were like, are you doing it or not? And I just totally lied. I was like, oh, yeah, I'll be there. And she's like, oh, great. And I was like, don't worry. Like you said, you got your Fightful fans. They can get it from you guys. You don't need me. It's fine. You got it up.
Everyone, again, make sure to subscribe to Alex's channel, subscribe to Fightful, check out all the shows we do. Sean, we'll be back on Monday with Denise doing the post-Raw show. Raw, a shorter show than this pay-per-view. No show should ever be longer than Raw. All right, that's a rule I would like to make. No show, and don't care if it's a pay-per-view or what it is, it should not be longer than Raw. Subscribe to our channel, check out Fightful.com. You can check out The Distraction. Tuesdays, we review movies. Thursdays we talk about wrestling. Saturdays we play video games. That's what we do. Happy birthday to Joe Holbert. Joseph, he's out of his mind right now. Alex, I promised the people we were gonna fight, so here's what we're gonna do to close the show. All right. We're gonna play rock, paper, scissors. All right. I don't know what this settles, but it's gonna settle bragging rights. You know, WWE's pay-per-view called bragging rights. That's what we're gonna do. That's how we're gonna close the show.
The thing is, Jeremy, what you can't see right now is that I am a beefy 6'4". And I'm very much to be worried about. So
look, I'm a lover, not a fighter. All right, I'll threaten to fight people, and then I'll get in like a Mr. Miz pose.
Don't worry, I'm actually like 5'11" with a dad bod, so it's fine. Don't worry.
Are you ready, Alex? We're gonna settle this beef once and for all.
Is it on three?
No, it's on shoot. So it's rock, paper, scissors, shoot. And then on the shoot is when you do it. All right.
These Atlantic different. Okay.
Right. Don't blame the time differences of the rules here, or American rules versus UK rules.
All right.
All right. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Ooh.
You're both do scissors? Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I feel like there was a delay there. Chat, let me know there was a delay and mine hit first and then Alex saw it and that's
no
why.
Way. I was committed, man. I thought he's going to go for the swerve. He won't have the scissors again. I'm in. All right,
everybody. Thanks for tuning in and subscribe to the channel and we will talk to you later on.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.